Hello and welcome to Medical Episode 223. I'm Corey. Here's Daryl.
Yo.
Hey, we are back. It's been a while. We're on a little vacation. Actually went out and to Daryl's part of the country and met up with Daryl at one point out there and in the Baltimore's.
It's good. Yeah, we sat and had some breakfast. I met your wife. We chatted a tiny bit of magic. We chatted some basketball. We chatted some basketball. Congratulations, Bucks.
Yeah, go Bucks.
W.
It was good time to see you, and then we had to take off some time because the Bucks were winning the chip, and you know it's just crazy around here. No, that's not the reason, but that certainly happened too. But
part of the reason was I started working insane hours, so I took up a second job learning to deal blackjack at a casino, and the hours were 6 to 10, Monday through Friday. And for those of you that know our podcast, we tend to record on a Monday evening around 5:30. So that was no longer possible and it won't be for the next couple of weeks. So I think we're recording this podcast at noon on a Saturday. So we'll probably do that for the next couple of weeks before things get back to normal when I have some of my evenings reclaimed after I start my new shift at this casino.
So. Learning how to deal blackjack must be no joke, man. It's a rigorous training process, I guess, huh?
It's a 6-week training. Yeah, I can talk about that as non-magic stuff before we get into the podcast. It's a 6-week training. It's a 6-week training, 4 hours a day. And I'm learning blackjack and what they call carnival games. So if you've ever been to a casino, you've seen things like Ultimate Texas Hold'em or 3-card poker or 4-card poker, things like that. But the first week and a half was just like learning things that you have to do for like the cameras at the casino. So like how you count money, how you count chips, how you deal cards, how you like use your hands, things like that. Like your hands are only allowed to do certain things at certain points on the table. Like you cut the table in half and your hands just operate as that part of the table. So like the left half. So if there's 6 seats, the left half of the table, use your left hand for everything. The right half, use your right hand for everything. And so I was not particularly functional with my left hand. And so I've gotten some more like manual dexterity with my left hand from doing all this stuff. But then you learn the whole game of blackjack with all the side bets and how to kind of functionally manipulate the cards and interact with the guests and make sure security can see the appropriate things. And then you learn some of that stuff for some of the other carnival games and electronic table games that the casino might have. So
now have you learned anything about like identifying randomization or maintaining randomization where you can spot like, you know, some manipulation of your opponent's decks in a magic game now? Is there any carryover?
No, it's the carryover is mostly like odds and like, actually the biggest thing is the most important thing in casinos is game protection. So the function of game protection is essentially, kind of your eyes are always on everything all the time. Like you have to pay attention to the player's bets and their movements and make sure they're not adding chips or taking chips away from their bets and they're not reaching into the bankroll and they're not touching their cards and they're not supposed to and things like that. So it teaches you to like burn an eye on like 5 or 6 people at once, and kind of it's a chaotic environment in a casino. There's noise and lights and blinking and flashing and televisions, and so like you get the ability to see through all these attractions and sort of focus. And so the game protection lets you A, focus on the game a little better, but B, also be able to pay attention to your opponent's hands and see if they're doing shady manipulative things with their cards to either add cards to their hand or shuffle their deck inappropriately or things like that. So like
keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on how many explorers they played.
No three lands one turn. But yeah, that's kind of the skill I think that would carry over from magic to dealing to magic is that operating as sort of the table captain of a casino game, you just have to kind of have your eyes on everything all the time. So it's like you get this focus ability to see inappropriate things that might be happening.
Hey, you know what? I've been watching a hell of a lot of basketball lately, obviously. Milwaukee Bucks. Yeah. The refs get a lot of shit for bad calls and stuff, but it is incredible the stuff they do pick up on the fly and in the heat of the moment. With the crowd being as loud as it is and with all the stuff going on, it's like the fans can watch stuff and watch the replays and then get so up in arms and they're like, oh no, his toe was on the line. But like the amount of accuracy that they do have for the game is like pretty incredible. You got to give them credit because when you talk about your eyes around all things at all times, it's like there's a ref that that cannot in a finals game with such high stakes. Like if there's a player that's shooting what looks like a three, but they've got like some long ass Kevin Durant feet and their toes are just touching the 3-point arc, they got to count it as a two, you know?
Yeah.
But they got to spot that stuff. That's not an easy feat.
Those guys are moving a million miles an hour. For as much shit as the referees get, like, you know, I could sit my lazy ass on my couch with my big screen Tesla TV and watch five different angles of how Giannis's three was a two. And if I was a Suns fan, I'd be like, that's a two. You got to call that. And, you know, maybe it gets away in a finals game because everything's moving so fast and we're not at the point in the game where they're calling up to the referee, the replay booth and stop and play and looking. And that happens, you know? But yeah, like definitely focus is one of those things that I think kind of goes under thought of as a Magic player. Like you're just like, you know, especially now when we went into quarantine, what did we, you know, consume the most Magic content of? People streaming where they're interacting with chat and playing cards and listening to music and maybe they have a dog and, you know, so all these things are happening. And so, like, the ability to still laser focus on the game while you have this environment around you is an impressive skill that I don't think we give a lot of credit to some of those folks for. So there's our full circle tie back to how you become a better Magic player.
There you go. Bring it back home.
By having good focus.
Yeah.
Having good focus.
You know, I have tried to stream before or record games for the podcast. And when you're talking through your plays and stuff, especially on MTGO with the chess clock, it's like I burn through that time so much faster, and I've lost games that I should have been able to win because I'm like trying to like, you know, be entertaining at the same time I'm like trying to like think through my moves when like I could just shut the hell up for a second and just like think and like be much more efficient. You've had those games on MTGO where it's like, okay, gotta make a move, gotta pass priority like really fast, and it really is an adrenaline rush sometimes, and can rely on your connection speed sometimes too. So
yeah, I can definitely say from that I streamed for a couple of years and I did have that experience. Thankfully, a lot of the decks, even though I was playing like grindy control decks, I played them with efficient finishers. So like I was playing Miracles, which is a bazillion clicks because of Sensei's Dining Top, but because that was legal when I was playing it. But I played with a Helm of Obedience kill. So instead of having to like Jace plus attack you with Snapcaster, like, or Brainstorm attack you with Snapcaster a bunch and like key through everything, it's just like, all right, Helm kill you. Like, you know, you die fast and I can click through it fast. But yeah, like interacting with chat and talking through what you're doing. And, you know, the toughest thing I think is drawing a new card and try and sequence your first few turns with a deck. Like you're like, all right, it's realistically probably Thoughtseize on one, Goyf on two, this thing on three. And you just tell that to your chat. So like, you know, this is why I kept the hand. And then you like draw a couple of new cards. You're like, oh, now my whole plan might actually be changing. I have to reconfigure how I'm going to get to the point I need to get to. Or I find out what my opponent's playing and do that. Like that's where it kind of gets tough to keep the people entertained. But I learned that if I'm recording for like the website or something like that, I actually play in the entire league and then go back and play it at like click speed where I can like click through the actions and then talk about the actions. And then like if I see an action, I can go, well, really, you know, the correct action is probably this. But at the time, I was probably thinking this or this and is, you know, trying to pull ahead in this way. And so that's kind of how I've went to recording for the website instead of versus streaming. It's a bit of a different experience.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then you don't have all the downtime too. You can just click through that. So
yeah, the video doesn't have to be 2.5 hours long. It can be an hour long, or if you break them down into segments, you know, you don't have to wait 30 minutes and slow sideboarding. You can just like load the second game, right click, show your sideboard and be like, all right, these came out, these went in based on the list I had. And just kind of go through it really fast. So it does shave like an hour and a half off of the viewers consuming of the content to be able to do something like that post editing. Yeah.
All right. Before we get too deep into this podcast, we better mention our sponsor. We do have a new promo code, by the way, manatraders.com. You can use the promo code Card Knock Life Podcast, all one word, which is much less of a mouthful than last month's. Yeah, the five young basset hounds. We no longer have to do that. Card Knock Life Podcast, all one word, will get you 14% off your purchase at checkout for 3 months. So there you go. You'll be interested in using that for the Modern Horizons 2 cards, which are all over the damn place price-wise, so save yourself the kidneys and sign up for a Mana Traders account.
You can only give one of those away before you die, Corey. You know that, right?
Yeah, well, I'm just like collectively. Like, I'm talking to multiple people. Oh, they all have a kidney to spare.
The royal kidneys. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Sure. But thank you, Daryl. But today, yeah, we got to get caught up on Adventures in Forgotten Realms. And then I also want to talk about Historic a little bit. I know it's not Daryl's domain. It's very much mine. I've been playing a lot of Historic lately. And there was a big kind of like leak from WotC yesterday about the jumpstart, the Historic jumpstart. So definitely got to talk about that, as well as the Historic Brainstorm suspension. And that is a big deal. It was a much bigger impact than I would have anticipated. So let's start with Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. We didn't do our set game, our picks for this one, and I'm not too upset about it because it's been rather lackluster, to say the least. Yeah. As far as appearances in modern decks go, I did a little bit of searching around, and I'm seeing like some Ingenious Smith in the Hammer Time decks. That's the 2-mana uncommon that when he comes into play, you look at the top, it's like the top 4 cards of your library, you can put an artifact in your hand. And then once a turn, when you play an artifact, you can put a +1/+1 counter on him. So it kind of functions like a little Glint-esque crane that gets a little bigger.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, no, yeah. Not terrible. And then there's Tasha's Hideous Laughter, which is an obvious include for the mill decks. That's the one that they mill until they get the 20 CMC. And then Demolix sees a little bit of play in like some Phoenix style decks, not necessarily Phoenix, but like, is it tempo style decks in modern?
Yeah.
So, you can do this thing where you go on to TCG Player and you can search from, by market price, high to low. And when you get past like the price of like a case of the set, you can see like singles and the price of the singles. And usually that indicates like the interest in these cards. A lot of it is driven by EDH. You can see like the like blinged out like Tiamats and stuff like that. But I usually like kind of make connections between like the other cards that like look like constructed players to like, you know, their likelihood to see play in modern, because, you know, that has a lot to do with the other prices. So based on that information, I was kind of trying to like peek through to see which of these cards showed up in modern decks or even historic and very few historic too. And there's not a ton, but I wanted to kind of go through and list some of these off. But Daryl, do you have any predictions? Like, do you know much about this set?
No, not at all. I don't know much about the set. I just think like one card I'm still going to kind of cling to is I wouldn't be surprised about, just showing up. It's just Portable Hole. It just feels very flexible.
Yeah.
And I think it will show up more in the sideboards of decks that are trying to fight hate than decks that need like a flexible removal spell, because like if you're in white and you're trying to be something like Rest in Peace, this is just an easy answer to Rest in Peace. But you can also bring in the like pick off a prowess creature early or something like that.
Yeah, and Portable Hole does show up. So Portable Hole works really well with Lurrus, which some people have caught on. It's a card you can get with Urza's Saga because it's an artifact. So.
You cannot get that card with Urza's Saga because its CMC is not one, or its mana value is not one, its mana value is white.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I didn't consider that. Okay, well, it isn't in the Urza's Saga deck.
Oh, it's good in the Urza's Saga deck, so it's just an artifact, but we actually had that discussion with one of our viewers when we first talked about Urza's Saga.
Oh, yeah, zero or one. Okay, yeah, interesting. I didn't consider that. Okay. All right, yeah, good point. Yeah, there are Whir of Invention in like this Wurza deck, so that would make sense. You can still grab that. Okay.
Yep.
So that's a good one, and that one sinks in play, yeah. And I'm sure it will. That's a good pick. The others, so Demolik is one of the most pricey singles in the set. It's at like $15 for the regular version or like $28 market price for the full art one. There's like a bunch of these dragons that are seeing like high prices, probably because of Commander, and I don't think they're going to see much play in Modern or anything. Some of the Planeswalkers. I was curious about the Book of Exalted Deeds, because there's the combo in Standard right now with that and the Manland, and obviously you have many more choices for Manlands in Modern. This is pretty costly mana-wise for Modern, but you do have some more support to get it done. There's also a lot more land destruction, so I wasn't sure what to expect. And no one's playing it.
I just want to understand the combo and make sure I understand.
Yeah.
The book makes an angel a platinum angel. Right?
Yeah.
Right?
That's yep.
what it does? Okay. So if it's still a land, does it still have the ability it's a platinum angel? Or
yep.
Oh.
That's the thing. So once it's no longer a creature, it's still a platinum angel.
It retains the platinum angel effect. Oh.
So here's how it reads. It says it's got one effect that doesn't matter to this combo, but then it also has an activated ability. It says white, tap, exile the Book of Exalted Deeds, colon, put an enlightened counter on target angel. It gains, you can't lose the game and your opponents can't win the game. Activate as a sorcery. So my thought is, in modern, with Mutavault being one mana versus that man land in standard being three mana, this is a turn four setup, rather.
It's mana intensive for white and sneaking in your Mutavault somewhere, because you have to literally go white land.
Yeah.
Mutavault.
Now the Mutavault can tap to activate its own ability, you know.
Right. What I'm saying is, like, to curve it out on turn four, you have to not have to play the Mutavault early.
Oh yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, because of the casting cost of Book of Exalted Deeds. You could play like Chromatic Stars and stuff, though. You know, there's ways around that.
You probably have to because
I think you end up with some kind of like awkward situations if you draw like a second Mutavault or something.
Yeah, that's not great.
But anyways, no one's doing it, at least at this point. But I don't know. You think it's something that can be done in modern? Is there something to that, or is it just like too bad, too slow?
I just don't think it's good enough. So I actually found this thread, because while we were talking about cards that might be playable from that set,
yeah.
I found this thread on Modern Magic. What are the new playable cards from the D&D set so far?
Yeah.
We covered quite a few of them. We have those new come into play untapped man lands. If you have less than two lands, they come into play untapped. So they're decent for aggro decks. But Wish is an interesting card. If you don't remember what that is, so two in a red, search your side. You can play a card from your sideboard this turn, or a card you own outside the game, so your sideboard. Wish being a capable target, not a terrible one. And I'm just gonna keep scrolling through this thread. You can keep talking, and I'll speak if I. All
right. Well, I'm gonna keep going through the list in order here, because I've got some kind of like method to this madness.
Okay. Well, go ahead then. Sorry.
Circle of Dreams Druid comes up next. It's like a $8 rare. This is the Elf Druid, green for a 2/1. Tapped at a green for each creature you control. And so this one sees play in Historic because it's like it's like Elvish Arch Druid, 5-8. But in Modern, I think you have many more choices that can play that type of role.
Yep.
Yeah. So I don't know. Probably not good enough in Modern.
Just a little slow.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's something you're looking for that mana in Birthing Pod decks, then sure. Or not Birthing Pod, but like Core decks. Sure, because then you get, you know, you get a Gaia's Cradle functionally, but I just don't think it's good enough.
Yeah, it does. So that's kind of the thing. It's like, it's not specific to elves. So that is interesting to note. Like, you could toss it in some other deck, but its cost is so specifically green that it's like, what other deck is mono green that would want this? It's like, it's gotta be elves, you know?
Yeah,
there's that, and then there's Treasure Vault, which is kind of interesting. And Treasure Vault is the one that it's just like taps. It's an artifact land, by the way, which is interesting. And it taps for colorless, and it can pay. You can pay XX and tap and sack it to create X treasure tokens. I think the fact that it's just an artifact land that comes into play untapped and can produce mana is like worth looking at alone for like affinity decks, right?
Yeah.
But then it's got the upside of like being able to like create some additional artifacts if you just happen to flood out, which I don't think affinity decks are going to be really in the market for that type of thing. But
no, I'm not 100% sure where we're going to get use out of the second ability.
Yeah, but we also have Urza's Saga, which is like just a much better artifact land at this point, so probably gets outclassed by that.
Yep, I agree with that.
There's Acerorak, the Archlich. And Acerorak is the dude that,
is he the one that like bounces if you haven't completed a specific dungeon.
Yeah, that's it. Yep. And when he enters the
he enters the battlefield, you venture into the dungeon.
Right, yeah. And then he's got this other effect. He attacks, you create a 2/2 black zombie token unless the player sacrifices a creature.
That kind of irrelevant. The most irrelevant effect you've ever seen.
But I've seen people pair this guy with like omniscience and like just complete dungeons, like straight up.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if that's like really that powerful, you know?
I think there's a dungeon that will actually just kill them if you do that.
Is there? There's, like, the payoffs for the dungeons are really weak.
Well, the dungeon that you're supposed to complete for him,
yeah,
is the one that has the best payoff. But I think there's one that just like literally does a damage to something. So there's one dungeon that exists that you can draw your whole deck. The Lost Mine of Pandelver or Pandelver. The end of it is draw a card. So you can just, and then Dark Pool is in it as well. Each opponent loses one and you gain one. So you just can kill your opponent and draw your whole deck with this guy.
But he doesn't bounce if you've completed it. So you can't
wait, the lost mind of Pandelver is the one you have to complete?
No, you can complete any one you want, but there's like, it's not infinite. You know what I mean? Like,
no, but there's a specific dungeon that if you don't complete it, it's infinite. So what's the dungeon printed on that card?
On which card are you talking about?
On the creature
you just talked about. When you venture, you choose which dungeon you're working on.
No, but it says if you haven't completed a specific dungeon.
Oh, it does.
He bounces. Yeah, I think it's the Tomb of Annihilation. Oh. But I can't remember which one it is.
Oh yes, you're right. I'm sorry. Tomb of Annihilation. Yep.
Yeah. So if you don't ever do the Tomb of Annihilation, but if you have omniscience in this guy, your opponent is just dead because
got it.
The Lost Mind of Pandelver is a dungeon that is you venture into it, scry one. You venture, you either make a treasure or a goblin, and then you venture, you go to the Dark Pool, which each opponent loses one, you gain one, and then their last step is draw a card and then you complete the dungeon. Gotcha. So you just infinitely venture into that dungeon, you deal your opponent 20, and you draw your whole deck. Or you know, whatever. You deal your opponent damage equal to your deck minus one.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, or your deck plus one, sorry. But yeah. Yeah. So that's the omniscience combo. You're just not allowed to complete the Tomb of Annihilation. That's the dungeon you can't finish.
Gotcha. All right. And then I only have one more. You talked about Wish already. The other one I have here is Flame Skull, and I might be missing some uncommons because my method doesn't really go too deep on the cards in this set with like price. But Flame Skull is one red for a 3/1 flying, can't block. It has rejuvenation. When Flame Skull dies, exile it. If you do, exile the top card of your library until the end of next turn. You may play one of those cards. So you can either cast Flame Skull or the card exiled from the top of your library.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's like a card that we would say is like really good like 5 years ago, but it's probably like outclassed by a lot of things these days, and like 3 mana is a lot of mana in modern. It has to be like 2 or less to be like a valid aggressive creature. So maybe not good.
Yeah. I mean, it's decent. But I think you're right. It's been crept out by a lot of things.
Yeah. So there you have it. I don't know. Is there anything else popping up in that conversation that you were looking at?
No, nothing else. We've hit it all here.
Okay. So my follow-up question for this is like, does this, you know, like we're seeing like maybe 5 cards that are like showing up in modern, maybe 4. And like some of them are like kind of fringy at that. Is this like a good thing? Because when we have like Modern Horizons 2 that comes out and it like changes everything and it's like so powerful that it like forces you to like completely overhaul your decks, it's like kind of miserable sometimes. As exciting as it is, it's kind of miserable in terms of like just needing to like completely refresh everything. This is like kind of in the days of old where like standard sets come out and it's like, yeah, we might see some things in modern, but for the most part, like nothing big. It's definitely not as exciting, but it's certainly kinder to your pocketbook. Where's the middle ground here? What are we looking for with our standard sets?
So I think, standard is kind of its own standalone environment, and you want powerful cards that are interesting, but that do kind of have ripples on a bunch of different formats. But at the same time, you don't want to have to force them to force players that are modern players or legacy players to have to spend just infinite dollars every set. Like, you do want that, but like, those players aren't going to buy the sealed product. They're just going to go buy cards.
Yeah.
So I think it's not bad for the format, especially after you print a set like Modern Horizons 2, where you infuse a ton of stuff into the format. I still don't think the format's had enough time to settle such that a new infusion of more powerful stuff is would be good for it. So I think, this a period of like, here's 3 months where maybe we print a standard set that's not bad, so bad that like how Throne of Eldraine was so strong that everything else looked bad. You don't want those things that
Yeah.
are bad. But a middle of the road standard set that, maybe a couple cards are good enough for modern, fringily. Maybe one or two are standouts. They're great. But maybe they don't fit into standard, and that's okay. Like, that kind of set is totally fine for standard and just having a good standard play environment. So, especially off the heels of something like Modern Horizons 2. If you're talking about, Modern Horizons 2 is coming out in 6 months, I would love for you to print a standard set with a lot of powerful stuff in it. Like, Throne of Eldraine was great. Modern Horizons was kind of far off in the distance, and the next one was pretty far off too. And so, like, the fact that we printed this infused modern with this huge collection of cards is awesome. Some of them were kind of stupid, and they were dealt with as such. But the fact that there were so many just cool and powerful cards was nice. So it's like there's definitely a balance of, I think, hey, you can print more powerful sets in between your Horizons type sets, so that there's like an infusion if you want to keep pushing new cards into the format, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's Throne of Eldraine is kind of what I had in mind when I was thinking about this, because that was a set that like had big impacts on modern, like to the point where we had tons of bans as a result of it, like unprecedented. And not just in modern, but in a lot of sets, obviously. Like I think all of us remember that one, right? It wasn't too long
Yes.
ago and we're still feeling the effects of it. But something like this comes around, and this is kind of more par for the course, like the way that it was like for the last like 20 some years before the Modern Horizons sets and things like that started showing up. But now it's like we've had these Modern Horizons sets, and we expect those to come out and see a whole new face of modern after them. And so after those sets come out, it's like anything that is to follow them like is just a complete letdown. You know what I mean? And like, as a player of modern or historic or whatever other like constructed format, even legacy, that like has interest in something that, brings that much of a punch to those formats. I know historic isn't affected by Horizons, but take for example like Throne of Eldraine or whatever. The when a set like this comes out, it's like I have almost no interest in it. And that's okay. Maybe it's not for me. It's just in the same way that like Horizons isn't for the standard player. But it's weird to think that, because it is a set that has cards that are modern legal, but it's just weird to like look at it and just like I went to the pre-release. I took my little brother to the pre-release, and I'm like, I can't even think of a single card that I'm excited about to include in my historic or modern deck. And honestly, it might, if I don't know what's rotating in standard. I'm really not in what's in standard.com here. Based on the standard rotation, and I'm gonna put my foot in my mouth because I should know this stuff. It may be that it's not gonna do anything to standard either because of freaking Throne of Eldraine. You know what I mean? Legal
Yeah.
until quarter four. Zendikar Rising. Okay, so Throne is gonna rotate out.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Phew. But yeah, I mean the impact of something like Horizons is just too immense. It's crazy. That's the thing that I find like potentially problematic. It's just like what that does to these environments, these non-rotating formats. It's like, wow. But
Yeah.
it's definitely exciting, and I'm having a lot of fun playing it. It's just like, holy shit, like brace yourselves when those come out. So that kind of brings us to the next topic, which is we're getting one of those for historic. Yeah.
Yep.
Yesterday on the Reddits, this was shared because I don't think Watsi intended on posting this, but on their webpage, the historic jumpstart was posted briefly and then later archived. And they announced historic jumpstart to be released on August 12th, which includes cards from Modern Horizons, Modern Horizons 2, and 31 new to Magic cards. This is an Arena exclusive set. And it is going to be intended to, you know, like, breathe some new life into Historic, which is a set or a format that really needs that sort of thing. Now, Strixhaven did a lot of that. Strixhaven made some big changes to Historic, and that's exactly like that format is facing what I'm talking about. It's like these standard sets come out and like they're not impacting Historic, and that's a set that's or a format that's much closer to those types of environments. But the fact that they just like pumped like Brainstorm and Memory Lapse and all of these like super powerful legacy cards into it, it's like, who cares? We've got Brainstorm. All of the other blue draw spells that you're going to print that cost less than 3 mana are just like not relevant to us. You know what I mean? It's like kind of invalidated because we have this like really awesome thing that you just gave us. So,
correct.
Yeah, it's like, okay, now we're gonna need something much more powerful. We're gonna need a Horizon set of our own, and I think Historic is finally getting that. So it's getting the same treatment as Modern. I think it's gonna look a lot like Modern pretty soon. Initial impressions, Daryl.
Here's my initial question.
Yeah.
Which is these 31 new to Magic cards that are only gonna be on Arena.
Yeah.
Do you think they're only going to be on Arena because of the fact that they're going to do some sort of Hearthstone-style element of randomness? Or do you think that they're going to be developed as Magic cards that could be released in paper? Or what do you think about those? Let's start there. I'm just curious. I think that the only reason one would do cards that are limited to Arena only, that don't have an inroad to a paper equivalent already on the horizon, would lead me to believe that they are very specifically built for an electronic digital only environment.
You know, that's possible. I didn't think of it like that. My initial take was that the Historic stuff, they're really trying to just diversify Historic from Modern. And the fact that they've got those Mystical Archives cards available to Historic and not to Modern has done that quite a bit already. And so this is just a way to further, you know, differentiate. Like, the fact that we can play Faithless Looting in Historic, but it's completely banned in Modern, like, already has made a big difference between those two. You know, Brainstorm was a big thing. Obviously, that got... Brainstorm was suspended, right? We're aware of that, and I know I didn't talk about that a moment ago when I mentioned it. But
I mean, it's pretty obvious. Brainstorm being suspended, it's literally the second best draw spell in the game next to Ancestral Recall. Like, we don't even have to talk about it.
Yeah. But that was, I mean, obviously that card was like the poster child of that format for a long time. And that format was like completely freaking blue. It was like legacy blue. And now it was like that card being suspended. I was shocked at the impact that had. But you take for granted sometimes like what those cards can do. And the difference between Brainstorm and Opt is huge. You know, the difference between a legacy card and a standard card is huge. It's like, we're talking like 20 years here.
You have underestimated how big the gulf between Brainstorm and Opt is.
Yeah. So
you could put the Empire State Building in it and still not see it. Like, it is a huge difference. But yeah, no. And I think it's good for Historic to be differentiated from Modern. But it was just a thought I had, is like when you said there were 31 new cards that were never had been seen before and were going to be released on Arena first, my first thought was, well, this could be a situation where they have these very specific to Arena cards that they leverage to utilize, like allow to have some randomness a la Hearthstone or similar, or try to take advantage of just some digital checking mechanisms, like how much easier it would be to check if these cards exist in your deck or something like that. Then, you know, because we talked about the companions and how easy it would be on Magic the Gathering Online or on Arena for the computer to just check that you meet the qualification. But that, you know, for the human error of checking of, you know, does this person's deck meet the qualification of Lurrus, your opponent just has to inherently trust that that's true. And then, you know, like the judge has to confirm that your deck list is built in such a way. And if they miss something or misremember a card, you might get away with it. And then you cast that card, and, you know, maybe there's a judge call, and that's really awkward. But, like, that sort of stuff is kind of the thing I'm thinking about. So, like, are we taking advantage of digital checking, or are we doing something fancy with randomness, or are these just cards that are going to get to real Magic eventually? That was just an interesting thought I had, and I'm not sure. I can't speak to that, but I think it would be kind of interesting if they did try and differentiate Arena and say, you know, this is its own product, and here's why, because it can do this cool thing.
Yeah, it seems like they're designing with like the digital product in mind these days, and so I wouldn't be surprised if there's stuff that's just like this is just gonna run a lot better on Arena, and maybe it's not like Hearthstone level randomness, but like the venture into the dungeon stuff like definitely works better on Arena than it does in real life. It's a little awkward to try to find a tiny little piece of, you know, whatever to put on the card to show you which dungeon you're in, and then it's like, oh, you bump it over and you have to like try to remember where you were, you know. It's weird. So online, it's great because you could just like hover over it and, you know, do the thing. So,
Cool. All right. Yeah. But yeah,
anyways.
that was the first thought. So let's talk about the other part of this, which is there's going to be Modern Horizons cards. There's going to be Modern Masters or Modern Horizons 1 and 2 cards. I don't know why I want to say Masters now. That's totally sick.
It is like Masters, yeah.
It feels functionally like the same thing.
Yeah, it is.
So, like, what order do you go in? Do you want to go in, hey, I think we could see some mistakes, and these would be the mistakes? Or do you want to talk about things that would be good for, because you're the historic captain here. So
Well,
I'm just going to inquire with you of, like, what direction do you want to go and about with the story?
okay, so first of all, I don't want to call out mistakes before they even made the announcement because they haven't even posted this article officially. I don't know what happened yesterday, but they like recalled it like immediately. So we don't know what's happening with this, but it certainly like stirred up some speculation about like, oh, what are some Horizons cards that we could really see like infused into historic that would like be awesome, and that's the exciting part of it. But there's also some talk about like, okay, what do we not want to see? You know, like, what are we afraid of? So first of all, let's talk
That's
about.
what I would consider a mistake. That's what I would consider a mistake. It would be a
Yeah.
mistake to put that card into the format.
So prior to the Brainstorm suspension, which it'll probably just be banned. You know, like it's doing a good thing. Like it'll probably be gone. There was a lot of blue. It was like a ton of Is It Phoenix, a ton of blue control. Lots of blue decks. Now there's a pretty healthy diversity, but it's still a little bit, you know, it's a little bit like inbred kind of, you know, there's a lot of like similar stuff going on. So okay, so here's what we're seeing in historic. There's Jund Sacrifice, there's a bunch of Auras decks with like Core Spirit Dancer and stuff. There's Selesnya Beats, just green white Collected Company stuff.
I believe Kibler calls that green white little kid, or I like to call it green white Kibler. Just
Okay.
like fairly costed creatures that have lots of stats and attack you.
Yep. There's Niv-Mizzet decks, five color Niv-Mizzet decks. There's Jeskai control decks in like a variety of different styles, but the main one is like the Opus one. You discard the Opus, and then you play Torrential Gearhulk to flash it back.
Tasty.
There are some Gruul aggro decks, but they're not as many as there used to be. There are definitely some mono red aggro decks with Soulscar Mage and the guy that's a 1/2 that becomes a 2/2 haste when you have two spells in the graveyard. I can't
Yeah,
remember his
I
name.
don't remember the name of it, but yeah, I know what
Yeah,
you're talking about.
there's like Bant Angels.
Get your thought answer. I remembered it.
I've been playing a ton of black and white decks. I just really like black and white on this format, and white was really pretty underrepresented except for the Selesnya Company as prior, but there's a lot of really cool white creatures like the Elite Spellbinder I really dig, and like Thalia's in this format, Luminarch Aspirant. But I came across this black and white Death Shadow deck because Death Shadow is actually in this format, and we have tons of the
Oh,
like
yeah.
pay three life lands that are flipped to like the
Spells.
Aghanim's Awakening or Aghanim's Crypt or whatever the heck that card's called. And so I found this Death Shadow list on Reddit the other day, and I like put that together, and the guy was like, I got to Mythic. So I've been playing that. I just reached Diamond with it, and in the games I've been playing, like at first it was like I hadn't seen any of it, but in the last couple of days I've been running into it like a ton, like tons of black white Death Shadow and Mardu Death Shadow. So it's becoming a thing. So I think we're gonna see more of this Death Shadow list.
Okay.
And then there's still goblins, there's still elves, and
various
yeah.
other.
And then there's still some of the Dreadhorde Arcanist decks too. So there's stuff out there. Anyways, the thing is, the stuff that people want to see, and I kind of stole some ideas from lists that people were making. Goblin Engineer would be really cool. Seasoned Pyromancer.
So let's talk about Goblin Engineer.
Yeah,
is
go
there
ahead.
Anything busted? And I'm just kind of inquiring. Is there any like super busted artifact that we need to be scared of in that format?
Like combo potential or what?
Yeah. Combo potential.
No.
Like.
No, I don't think so.
Because you can reanimate anything, right? But you can only dump small things, or is it the other way around? You can dump anything and reanimate small things.
You can reanimate target artifact with confirmed mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield.
So reanimate small things, dump
anything. Dump anything, yeah. So, there are...
It's like a big dumb artifact, like a Platinum Imperium or something that would be scary for people to dump. But like, if you know, are we scared of 3 mana in Tomb? You know? Like, I don't think that's the case.
3 mana in Tomb. Yeah, I don't think so. It's 2 mana.
Oh, 2 mana in Tomb. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's 2 mana in Tomb scary.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think the artifact decks could actually use a little bit of a boost, honestly. And I'm usually the last person to say that, but in Arena, we don't have Mishra's Bauble and we don't have Urza, so it's relatively healthy. The artifact decks in Arena are like Tempered Steel, Ornithopter stuff, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's the enchantment that gives creatures +1/+1 for each artifact and enchantment.
All the glitters.
Yeah. That one. So that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So Engineer might be one that comes back to haunt them later on if they do something stupid with you know, artifacts, but
as like of right put Urza into the format, which is the thing that could happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
if they're using Horizons cards, it should be a disaster, but
yeah. So the good thing is none of this stuff affects like price of paper cards because it's all online.
Nope.
So that's good.
No, that's
The next one I have is Seasoned Pyromancer. This is just a good value creature.
That card should be legal in every single Eternal format, just because that's just a good card. Just like good, clean rummaging, make a couple bodies later. Like this is just a very fair Magic card. Like everybody should play with it once in their life.
Yep. Unsettled Mariner would be like a wonderful 2-drop for like the spirits. There's some spirits decks that could really use another 2-drop.
Unsettled Mariner is just a good tribal card because it can be anything. Like, it's a tribal card that protects your dudes. Like, it's fantastic.
Yeah. I'm into Solitude and Grief. I know a lot of people would be a little nervous about those, but I think, like...
There's no... Wait, there is Ephemerate. Yeah, I'm out. I'm out on that.
There is Ephemerate. Yeah, that's true. I didn't think of that.
You can't let those things be printed if Ephemerate exists. I'm sorry.
Okay,
well... Have you been triple Solituded yet? Because if you haven't, I've done it to people and like watched. I literally triple solituded a guy who was playing Death Shadow. He had like he went
oh,
like double
God.
Devil Death Shadow Scourge Gurmag Angler, and he attacked like with all of it. And I was like, okay, Solitude, eat your Scourge, kill your Death Shadows, Ephemerate, kill your Gurmag Angler, go, like proceed with your turn. And my opponent was just like, how do you beat that? You just can't win. And so, like, yeah, no, getting triple solituded is miserable.
Okay.
I think, actually, that getting triple solituded is a worse play pattern than getting triple griefed.
Triple griefed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I would believe it feels real. Yeah, and this format is very, like, creature-oriented, and so I could see that being terrible. I can get behind that. I forgot Ephemerate was in this format because it never gets played yet. So maybe as a trade-off for Solitude Grief, maybe we get Soul Herder in this list because Soul Herder can make a Soul Herder Ephemerate deck.
Oh, baby, that would make me actually play Historic. I am the biggest Soul Herder barn. Anytime I put that guy on the field, I'm in.
There's no E-Witness, though, so you're going to have to find something else. There's some very bad ones. I don't think they can return... non-permanents to your hand, so I think it gets a little weird, but anyways, there's that.
Give me E-Witness.
That's not in Horizons, though, is it?
I don't care. Give me E-Witness anyways. They'll put it in one of the anthologies. It's fine.
It's really not clear that they're not going to include things outside of Horizons, so that's possible.
Sure.
Esper Sentinel would be cool.
Yeah, it's just a good, clean, fair Magic card. I'm totally down with that.
Yeah, I could use another one drop in some of these white decks.
I mean, I just think it's also okay to have cards that punish spell decks. Like, it's not cool for people to just, like, as much as I like playing, you know, 40 spell control or whatever, 35 spell control, there has to be a downside to it. So, like, to have a card like this that's just, like, really fair, it's just a one mana, one, one, that kind of punishes those decks on tempo, I'm totally fine with that.
And there is a lot of control. People play tons of control in Historic. So believe it or not, you know, and you look at the card pool and there's really not a ton of stuff that leads to like all these control players, but they do it. You know, there's a lot of stuff.
Teferi is a hell of a drug.
But yeah, yes, yes. Also, Giver of Ruins is another good one drop for white, I think is a very valid inclusion. I want that one for this black and white Death Shadow deck. I think that would just put it over the top. Ice Fang, Kotal, or On Thin Ice would be interesting. There is a snow. There's a lot of snow stuff already from Kaldheim, so we could see this happening.
I mean, we could get that snow control rolling that I tried in Modern. That deck was bad. That deck was real bad. It was good, but it was also bad.
All right, well, let's add the other one in there. That enchantment that you have, what's that called?
Not the enchantment. Meritlegious Slumber. Oh yeah,
Meritlegious Slumber.
Dead of Winter too. Dead of Winter to get the wrath effect. That roll.
Yes.
I'm here for that, baby. Let's go.
All right.
But can I also have Arkham's Astrolabe?
Is that allowed? No, that's in my Oh God section.
Oh man, Arkham's Astrolabe would have made that snow control deck so good because you could like have offed your Astrolabes to Vraska. And then bought them back with the backside of Jorn and like drawn some extra cards and got that rolling. And that'd have been real nice. Like,
no, in fact, that's a perfect transition, Daryl, because Arkham's Astrolabe is in a category all on its own. It's next up on my list because I have an Oh God section coming up next, which is like, Oh God, will they? And I think Arkham's Astrolabe is exactly the type of card that they will reprint because this is the format where like they try these experimental reprints and they're like, oh, you know, Brainstorm, what could go wrong? We'll do that, you know, or Faithless Looting is banned in every other format. Why wouldn't it work here? You know, Arkham's Astrolabe.
Especially if you make Astrolabe a common and just eat up a common wild card. Like, I assume you have a gazillion common wild cards, right?
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's a...
I'd be okay with that. Yeah, let's just try it for a week.
Just make it a common. Just make it a common. Let it go. It is kind of scary because it does make the Niv-Mizzet decks function a little better and stuff like that. But like, who cares? God, it's a common. If people lose four common wild cards, no one's going to be butthurt about it. Like, they have zillions of them. But don't make it a rare. Don't do that. That would be a terrible idea.
Yeah. Well, you always get the wild cards back when you craft them. But to just go through
the
trouble.
Oh, if you craft
the
card that gets...
Yeah, but if you build the whole deck, you don't get the wild cards for the other cards back. So, yeah, if you make it a common, I think it's a fair... I mean, it would be an uncommon, probably, at the least.
I mean, that's fine, too. Like, I mean, just something that's not the kind of the bottleneck of wild cards is usually rare, right? It's not usually mythic.
Yes, yeah, I've basically got infinite uncommons and commons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, that's fair. What other cards do you think are Oh God no?
My Oh God, Oh God. Well, these ones I don't expect as much, but they're all cards that are like in their back pocket. They're like, if we want to make money, we'll reprint these ones, you know. So, yeah, Ragavan,
sure. All right,
Ragavan the monkey, right?
I mean, that's not a card that I think needs to be in Historic right now. that card can, it's just the tempo that Ragavan generates. Like, just getting turn 2/3 dropped out of a red X deck is just like. Because it could be anything. It could be blood. Well, I don't think Blood Moon's in Historic. It could be Blood Moon. It could be whatever the hell you take off your top of your opponent's deck. It could be like some crazy planeswalker, like because you don't know what colors the Ragavan deck could be playing until they expose it. So it could be like Jeskai and play Teferi, and I don't know if that Teferi is legal or not. But like that kind of stuff is just out there. And it's just like, oh God, I don't really want to have to like deal with that being a possibility.
Yeah, the mana base for Historic with all like the comes into tapped. Potential and like the removal being like a lot of two mana removal spells does not support an environment for Ragavan. You know, that thing would just walk all over it.
Oh yeah.
So turn one Ragavan is home free.
Yeah.
So Force of Negation, I like the forces, like that would be like a big splashy reveal that would
just
make me cry.
I think Historic would be better off without free cards.
I hope that Watsi agrees, but I just
as it's differentiated. Like, as a differentiator from the other formats, no free cards in Historic would just be great. So, like, no Mistress Bauble eventually, none of that stuff. Just
yeah, we
good,
don't.
clean Magic.
I mean, we have Ornithopter, right? Like, that, I already mentioned that, you know? Like, that's the bar.
Ornithopter's not a real card.
Yeah.
You know, like...
It's good in the decks it's good in, but...
Yeah, sure.
You know, it doesn't count. Okay, Hogak, right? I'm just talking about the stuff that, like, we've seen go wrong in the past.
Again, I want no free cards. Both. I think Hogak would actually be fine in Historic.
Now, it might be now, but eventually we're going to find some way to do the Hogak thing again.
Well, the thing is like Historic doesn't have the most common, the free enablers. So here it is. We're down to zero mana. Historic does have Narcomoeba.
It's got Stitcher Supplier.
It doesn't have Vengevine. It doesn't have Gravecrawler.
Oh,
it doesn't
okay.
have Bloodghast. Like, it doesn't have the things that easily enable Hogak. Like Bloodghast being the one where it's just like, I get to put this thing into play. For no effort, like no mana, no effort. Just as I'm playing the game, I get a thing that's going to flashback my Hogak, and Historic doesn't have Altered Dementia to like extra enable this thing to keep happening. So like, I think Hogak might be fine for now. But you're right. If they ever decide to put Bloodghast or Gravecrawler into this format, or Wizards just prints a thing that eventually ends up in the graveyard and comes back somehow, like yeah, if it's black or green, it would be a nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, they also print something that does that in every set, too. So, like, after a few years, like, we're going to find enough stuff. And if they print Hogak, they're going to make sure that it's playable, right? It's going to come alongside some new card that's like, oh, this is the buddy it needed, right?
Oh, yeah. Make two black creature tokens when it goes to the graveyard. Perfect.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that you're probably not considering because it just never saw play in Modern because it's just inferior to the Hogak Summer stuff. But there's a lot of stuff in Historic that could probably fill in.
Sure.
Murktide Regent, I think, would be miserable because we already, like, you know, it doesn't seem too bad, but we're already seeing, what? Like, is it Phoenix just roll all over this format?
So here's the question I have for it.
Yeah.
What counters are there in Historic? There's what? Memory Lapse.
Two mana?
Yeah. Is Mana Leak a thing too?
No. Memory Lapse is it. There's Memory Lapse, there's Sensor, and then quote unquote two mana counter is Saw It Coming. Some of them are playing that.
Yeah, no, that's not a counter
yeah,
spell.
That's about it, really.
So I mean, you don't have a ton of like cheap permission. So like a Delver style deck isn't gonna be like egregious. But yeah, I could see it fitting into Phoenix because it's not taking away from the resources that Phoenix cares about.
Yeah,
because you're playing the spells to get the Phoenixes and then you're delving the spells away to get the Murktide Regents. So it could just be another scary thing in the ice style threat for that deck. So I mean, I could see that being a problem. But it doesn't offend me to have it printed is kind of the problem I'm having.
Yeah, I mean, I would be very excited to play it for sure, but I also, like, here's my perspective on this Phoenix deck. Like, I played Phoenix before Brainstorm and Faithless Looting were in the format. I thought that deck was really good then. And then those cards came out, and it was like, oh my god, you gotta be kidding me. And all of a sudden it became the best deck. It was the best deck in the format. It was all over the damn place. Now Brainstorm is suspended, and it's, like, falling off. I still think it's like the best deck in the format. I think people are just sleeping on it because they're like, they've been waiting for an opportunity to play something different because they're so tired of playing it and playing against it that they're like, oh, now we can play red decks again or black decks again. But Phoenix is really good.
I also think people like to play decks like that on easy mode, right? Like if it's, you know, super easy, if it's that easy, then I want to do that. Like, whereas if it's a little more difficult, I might play something that's just more in my wheelhouse or like something I prefer to play, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way people, I think, approach that.
The last one I have in my oh god is Counterspell. I think Counterspell is just not needed, and that's one of the ones where it would be like, oh shit, did you see what they did? They printed Counterspell. So
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. 100%.
We've already got Counterspell. It's a mystical archive and it's banned. So the question is, like, does it become unbanned and then become part of it? So I don't think so.
Okay, it's already been printed and they banned it. Like, my thought process was like, yeah, they can't. You can't really like Teferi plus Counterspell is just kind of an egregious reaction or interaction. And so, like, just having that exist in Historic, probably not great. Not terrible, but not great.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Well, so that's all I got for Oh God. There's two that come to mind for might be okay now, but potentially regretful later. And Hogak probably fits that category too. I know we kind of talked about that one earlier. But Ren and Six is one. Like, we don't really have a ton of fetches to abuse. Like, we've got the Fabled Passage, but there's really not a lot to just, like, abuse. But I did see they are reprinting the cycling lands, the common cycling lands in this. So I think that plus Ren and Six might be nuts.
No, you don't want the common cycling lands to be in a format with Ren and Six. Like, that's not, like, that is just a free roll to insane card advantage. And, like, you basically get to functionally, for no cost, draw two cards a turn, which is bad. And, like, I'm okay with it being such that we have Ren and Six in that format if they don't do that. Because, you know, most people are going to want to play their Triomes instead of cycle them. And if you're going to pay three mana and use a Ren and Six ability to get back a Triome every turn, like, you know, you're locking up a lot of mana. So you better have a lot of lands already, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking about the one mana cycling lands, right? You know that.
I understand that. Okay. We are on the same page. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying, like, there's little to no cost to drawing an extra card if they put those lands in the format every turn. Whereas Ren and Six in that format, and the only cycling type land being like a Triome style thing, you know, that's, you're locking up a lot of, or like, even if it was just a canopy land, like, you're committing a land drop and a land, like, you're committing a lot of resources to those two things happen, like that happening. So,
yeah.
But yeah, just the cycling lands, just like, you still have your land drop and you just have to pay a mana. That's, you can't, that can't be a thing.
Yep. There you go. Oh, and the other one, I think I'm just wrong about the more I think about it, but that's Urza. Yeah. It's gotta be evil no matter how you cut it. But I'm just thinking, like, without the Mishra's Baubles and all the free artifacts, it's a little better, but probably not.
So I think Urza is acceptable in a world where there are not a ton of cheap artifacts that cantrip.
Yeah.
So, you know, and there's not, like, a good mana, like, a good infinite mana engine. So, like, in Modern, there were, you know, there's Astrolabe, and there was Mishra's Bauble that you could choose not to sacrifice and tap for mana, or sacrifice to draw a card. And there was, like, a bunch of these other, like, stars and spheres and stuff like that. And then on top of that, there was an infinite mana sink.
Yeah.
There was an infinite mana combo in Thopter Sword.
Right,
so, like,
right,
when you put all those pieces together, like, you can't have Urza be in a situation where, by itself, you can incidentally play the game and just draw an infinite combo. But, like, the idea of Urza of, like, hey, my artifacts are going to make mana, and I'm going to use that mana to do cool stuff, it's totally fine. So, like, if they give us Urza, they can't give us Astrolabe. Like, that's a hard line for me. If you're going to print Urza into that, you can't print Astrolabe. And if you print both, you're setting yourself up for failure. But I would be interested in seeing Urza come through this format, into this format, and see, like, a blue-white Yorion-style Soul Herder thing where you had, like, Ephemerate and Soul Herder, and you were blinking Urza to make Karnstructs, and then you had, like, Urza Saga and Yorion, and, like, this to me sounds kind of exciting, just to, like, kind of abuse the Enter the Battlefield effect of Urza to make a bunch of Karnstructs and, like, generate an army of tokens that can either get you a little value or just beat your opponent down and just, like, put them in a place where they have to be able to answer the board.
Yeah, yeah.
But the board is, but that board is answerable because one Wrath of God takes care of the problem instead of, like, having to have a very specific way to kill a bunch of artifacts, which is not something you commonly put in your deck that's maybe trying to be a bunch of creature decks or something like that. But just having, like, Wrath of God be an answer to, oh, look, I Yorion, Ephemerate, Soul Herdered my Urza, and I have six Karnstructs, and I'm going to kill you next turn. Okay, well, Wrath, I took care of literally everything. Like, go ahead, try and figure out what you're going to do next. Like, maybe you get to activate Urza once and cast a spell because you had the constructs, but, like, that's fine.
Yeah, and there's honestly there's plentiful wraths in Historic too. We've got Wrath and Day of Judgment, and there's lots of alternatives.
Yeah. So, like, that to me doesn't feel offensive. But if they put Astrolabe and, like, other playable small artifacts in, mistakes have been made. Like,
Yeah, it's gonna be hard to resist for sure the inclusion of other small artifacts, because I think there's a bit of that in Horizons. I know there's talk about like Witching Well, I think was gonna be in this.
oh God, yeah. If they did like Astrolabe, Witching Well, Urza, it's just like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Was this really necessary? Yeah.
All right. Well, that concludes today's episode. And we're at an
Does.
hour and 46 seconds. So we are awfully consistent.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if we went an hour and a half, I wouldn't have been surprised. We haven't really talked much in the past month. But there also hasn't really been much to talk about, which is kind of crazy. I've seen rumblings. I think before we close, I want to talk about this. I've seen rumblings about Paper Magic's return to dominance. Like, it's starting to happen at stores again. Stores are opening their play spaces. Hype? No hype? How are you feeling about this?
I went to the pre-release last weekend, actually. Like I said,
Nice.
I took my little brother. I coached him through. He's new to the game, so I coached him through. There was only
Nice.
like five people there or whatever, but we had
Oh,
some fun playing, and he went 2-1 with one bye in there.
hey,
But
hey, win's a win.
But yeah, I'm excited about that for sure. I've my stores around here have all been coming back. I think the East Coast is a little different than the Midwest. We might be a little bit ahead on like reopening things up, but it's a little less populated out here than it
I'm
is by
not
you
really
guys.
sure. Like, some of our stores have been struggling because, like, their play spaces kind of got like overtaken. So, like, they went into quarantine and they weren't using their play space. So they just kind of converted it into stock space.
Oh, sure.
Because they were still doing like online orders and people were picking up and stuff like that. Because they had the merchandise, people would come and get the merchandise. They still wanted to buy their minis or their cards or their D&D books or whatever. And so, like, all the stores in my area were still selling stuff, but instead of having to go like into this have a small convoluted stock room, they just basically converted their play space into more stock space. So, and I recently went into one of my stores recently, and their play space was still closed, but they had like literally just boxes and boxes of cards over it from collections they had bought and stuff like that. They just were using it as more stock space. So they're I think all the stores here are kind of working through that conversion. But as far as like behind in like reopenings and stuff, like we've been reopened pretty fully since June, and like even like my new employer at the casino, they lifted their mask mandate July 1st. So like at the beginning of this month, or like I started with them at like the very end of June, and then my training is all the way through July into the first week of August. And so like for like 5 days I had to train with a mask on or whatever. And then July 1st, all of Baltimore and the state of Maryland, via the governor, lifted all their COVID restrictions for like wearing masks and stuff. So like masks are optional. Yeah, masks are optional if you're vaccinated and mandatory if you're not. And working for Hopkins, I got vaccinated in January, so I've been ready for this for like 6 months. So I'm taking full advantage of not having to wear a mask places and like get to just like go as I please to where I please.
Yeah, it's
Like,
that's probably about
I'm
the
not
same
gonna
timeline as here, I suppose.
yeah, I'm not gonna go to like a hospital without a mask on or something, but like
Right.
realistically, I don't have to wear a mask to most places that I go to. So like I'll go to the game store when it opens again.
Yeah.
I go to the driving range, I go to the golf course, I go to the grocery store, I go to like Walmart. I don't have to wear a mask at work, like as long as I don't go to the hospital. Like, so I mean I'm basically back to normal life here.
And we're about to find out like how well this really is working around here, because we had like 95,000 people crammed outside of the Deer District from the last like couple weeks. So
Outside the stadium, yeah.
yeah. So we'll see.
Hopefully it works out pretty well. But I mean, I've seen a lot of articles, you know, political talk time, you know, I've seen a lot of articles where, you know, 90% of America's new COVID cases are like unvaccinated people in Florida and stuff like that. Three states.
Right. Yeah.
Like Alabama, Florida, and something else.
Well, that's encouraging. I mean, for the majority of the country.
For the rest of the country who's getting vaccinated, it's encouraging.
That it's working, right? Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, man, the Olympics are on. That's happening. That's encouraging too. You know, speaking of the Olympics, watched a little bit of the opening ceremonies yesterday, and all the athletes were walking into Final Fantasy theme songs and stuff like that.
Hell yeah! Cool.
Yeah, it was neat.
That's awesome. I'm kind of meh on the Olympics, as like I don't really care about the sports, like so I just don't watch it. But like, yeah, that's kind of dope.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. Nobuo Uematsu, big name in Japan. So I think that played into the ceremony, and I thought it was cool to hear the ba 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 da 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 ba da as they're walking in.
Yeah. The celebration of a victory of being able to reopen this country to do the Olympics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, all right, man. I think next time we talk, we should have some more information about this historic set, and maybe you can grin and bear some more talk about that.
Dude, it's not grin and bear. I just say things that sound stupid because I don't know anything. Well, I acknowledge I don't know much.
One of these days, I'm going to convince you to put a deck together. I know it's easier said than done, but
not a chance.
It just runs so smooth, Daryl. You never go back. Once I got rid of my MTGO stuff, it was like it's just so fast to like log into Arena and play. But
I definitely played Arena for like a couple weeks, and the interface was terrible to me. I hated it.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah. I do prefer the chess timer. I like the competitive level on MTGO. It gives you much more tournament level prep stuff. So it's got its
place. I couldn't figure out how to play a control deck at all. How to cast a counter spell.
Oh. Really? No, it's not that bad. You just do it. Maybe that was early on.
Yeah, maybe. I just was like, couldn't figure out how to get into the mode where you could cast counter spell or like a draw spell at the end of your opponent's turn.
Yeah. Well, it's improved a lot, so.
Yeah. So because I couldn't figure that out, it just definitely turned me off. I was just like, nope, I don't want to do this.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Later.
Modern Metacall is a production of CarnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with Cardnock Life offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading Cardnock Life content.